From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. One could say that Hillsboro used to love data centers as much as Eugene loves microbrews and food carts. And for many years, the city council of that community west of Portland would routinely approve their construction on a grand scale. But things have changed. For recently, the city council of Hillsboro did something that shocked longtime observers. They voted for a moratorium on all new construction of data centers. Today on the show, you'll hear from a longtime business reporter at The Oregonian about this big shift and hear how public sentiment against data centers has arrived in a once obliging city. Then, in the second part of the show, our own Brian Bull will bring us the story of an Oregon native-run farm in danger of losing funding from the federal government. That's next on Oregon on the Record. On the plus side, data centers are foundational to much of our digital economy and AI-generated output. On the negative side, they use a lot of energy, sometimes a great deal of local water, and, despite what is sometimes promised, actually produce very few local jobs. Yet despite these negatives, many city councils have actively courted these facilities and offered great tax incentives to build them in their towns. Well, that era might be ending. And if there's a location which best exemplifies the turning tide on data centers, it might just be up the road in Hillsboro. An Oregonian reporter now explains. Mike Rogaway, who is a business reporter with The Oregonian. Mike, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's interesting. You and I talked about data centers not that long ago, and we talked about how Oregon is such a data center friendly state. And we talked certainly about Eastern Oregon because of cheap prices for land. It was a big growth there. But also we talked about Hillsboro, a suburb of Portland. Talk about your recent story about a vote that the Hillsboro City Council did that might surprise some people.
Yeah, it's kind of an extraordinary thing. So what happened is Sunday morning, the city council posted a meeting. They're going to have a meeting 24 hours later. They have to give a day's notice. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, we're going to have a meeting. And we're going to have a meeting to have a moratorium on new data centers. Hmm. And why are they doing it so quickly? Why do they have this surprise meeting? Well, essentially, they were afraid that if the tech industry got advance notice of what they were planning, that they would submit a whole bunch of permits to get the process started and work their way around any moratorium. And wow. So they were trying to circumvent the data center industry by moving this quickly on this and moving somewhat, if not secretly, because there are rules about how you have to do business in the public's business in public in Oregon, at least discreetly. And it's a real reversal for the city, which, you know, as you and I have talked about before, Hillsboro has one of the densest concentrations of data centers in the state, even though it's a suburban community. It's got a lot of people and it's got a lot of industry there. It's got some, you know, it's got, how many acres? It's got about 440 acres of data centers there. They've consumed a great deal of the city's remaining industrial land. And the tide has just changed there. Residents are outraged. They're concerned about data center power use. They're concerned about pollution from backup generators. They're concerned about water consumption, although the data centers in Hillsboro don't use a lot of water. They're concerned about the loss of industrial land, and they're concerned about the tax incentives the city is giving. So, you know, after nurturing this industry with tens of millions of dollars or over the years, hundreds of millions of dollars in tax breaks, Hillsboro has taken a sudden left turn and a reversal, 180 degrees, and said, no, we don't want them at all, at least not in the way they've been. Okay. They're going to take 120 days and consider the next steps. But for now, they're not accepting new permits for new data centers.
Well, and that's what I wanted to ask you. It's a moratorium. It's not a line in the sand saying these will never happen here. But 120 days, is it the idea that they're going to study data centers? And at the end of 120 days, they could maybe say, well, let's do a slow growth approach. It could be no more data centers whatsoever. What's the inkling there?
Yeah, it could be either. Oregon land use law, as anyone in or who spent any time in Oregon for any period of time knows, is rather complex. And the state has a
Indeed.
process that you have to lay out. If you say, well, we're not going to allow this kind of use on this kind of land, you have to sort of follow a process. And this 120 days is the first step in that process where they can evaluate what they want from this. And they can extend it if the process isn't done within that what that's within that period. I guess that's about 4 months. They can go longer. And then they could say, it could be the spectrum of things. They could say, no, we don't want them at all. They'd have to make some sort of case for that. As I understand it, under Oregon law, Oregon land use law, some sort of reason why they're doing that. Or they could say, as you've indicated, perhaps some sort of slow growth. We'll have them here, or we'll have this many, or this kind, or something along those lines. At the very least, it's putting the brakes on an industry that has been growing very fast in Hillsboro, in Oregon, and all over the country. And it's a big reversal for a city that, whether it's the mayor or the city council or their economic development officials or their residents, they seem to have been content to let this industry grow until this past spring when sentiment changed rather abruptly.
I am wondering, is the sort of the phraseology of grandfathering in. Let's say after 120 days, they say we are going to really halt growth of data centers, but there's already a lot there. And so I guess would they just simply grandfather in those that are moving there? There's not some idea that they may ask data centers to leave Hillsboro that are already there, right?
No, I haven't heard any discussion of that. And I think the industry would be very, they would want to be bought out.
Sure,
They have a
sure.
profit motive, they have a financial interest. And under Oregon law, if you have a permit in process or you have a permit, even if you haven't begun construction, the city can't turn around and say, no, we take backs. We don't want you here after all. It doesn't work that way. So projects that are already on the book, on the drawing board, and there's maybe 60 acres or so of new data centers on the drawing board, those can go ahead. But other projects, are on hold, and perhaps indefinitely, perhaps permanently.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to longtime business reporter at the Oregonian, Mike Rogoway. So, Mike, is part of this has the political makeup of the Hillsborough City Council changed fairly recently, and so maybe that's one of the reasons? Or is this a same council that might have approved data centers 5, 10 years ago, but because of public outcry, they've sort of shifted their thoughts on data centers?
I think the answer is both. The political makeup of the city council has changed, but even within Hillsboro, even among sort of the activist community, there wasn't a lot of awareness or attention paid to this until very recently. Part of what's happened is the national discussion around data centers has changed. People are suspicious of artificial intelligence, they're suspicious of big tech, and they can see how rapidly this industry is moving and how it's physically changing the landscape of Hillsboro, of parts of Eastern Oregon, whole parts of the country. And so I think people are reacting to that. The specific trigger in this case was that the legislature, which moves even slower, we'll say, than the Hillsborough City Council, the legislature passed a moratorium this past spring on one class of data center tax break. It happens to be the class of tax break that Hillsborough uses for data centers. And the data centers responded. The moratorium on this tax incentive, it's a 1 year moratorium, took effect in June. And the data centers responded with a flood of 17 applications for new tax breaks just ahead of that. And they did something else. The tax breaks are supposed to last for 5 years. But what they did is they said, I'm applying for a tax break that starts now, and another one that starts 5 years from now, and another one that starts 5 years from then. And they took it out into the 2050s. And if you read how the program is described, as how people have conventionally understood it, there's this 5-year limit. And the data center said there is no limit. As long as we apply, you have to give us the tax breaks forever. Hillsborough decided they agree. with that. Not every lawyer in the state reads the state law the same way Hillsborough did, but they awarded all these tax breaks and the residents were furious. We had dozens or hundreds of people turning out for city council meetings and really handing it to the city council, some of whom were very sympathetic right from the start, and others came to be that way. When this process started, when the data centers first did this, Mayor Beach Pace posted an Instagram video and she said, oh, it's all about economic development, da da da. Well, her tone was totally different when she opened the meeting, this surprise meeting on the data center moratorium. She said, we did this to get around the tech industry. This is unusual. It's extraordinary, but we feel that it needs to happen. And I think, you know, the voice of the people has spoken up and it's something like a populist revolt.
Interesting.
And their city council hears it. Of course, you know, to a large degree, the horse is out of the barn and you can shut the door, but you still got nearly 500 acres of data centers in a city that is just about out of industrial land. Yeah. So, and of course the data centers don't employ very many people, you know, a few dozen in Hillsborough. You know, some of them have really just a handful, these data centers. So people are frustrated that you have this prized industrial land and it's not producing tax revenue because of the tax breaks, and it's not producing jobs because they don't employ very many people.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. I guess maybe my last question for you is this. kind of a cliche, but I'll go ahead and ask it. If it can happen in Hillsborough, it could happen anywhere? I mean, is this a great sort of canary in the coal mine of a council and a town and a city that used to welcome data centers is now looking at a 180-degree turn, as you said? I mean, is this something, are the very wealthy people who own the companies that own these data centers in Silicon Valley and Silicon Forest and Silicon Alley and even across the pond and in different places in Europe and Asia, is this kind of, like I said before, a canary in a coal mine for them and data centers?
Yes. I mean, I think one thing is that it's not new. The companies have been doing this, for instance, in Forest Grove, which is another suburb. It's sort of northwest of Hillsborough. No, it isn't. It's south west of Hillsborough.
Okay.
And a startup built a data center there right between a residential subdivision and a middle school. And the city council said, oh, this is terrible. If we had updated our zoning code, this wouldn't have happened. And we're so sorry. We wish we'd done it. But nobody else has done it. Nobody else, no other city then went, took that lesson and said, oh, we'd better do something about this. The current fight is in Salem, where another Silicon Valley startup wants to build a $5 billion data center there. And residents are furious. And the city council is scratching their heads saying, oh, we'd better learn something about these data centers. It may be too late for them to do anything about it. It's the last piece of industrial land, large industrial land at Salem. And they figure to lose it now to a data center that would employ 73 people. Residents are furious for all the reasons that people in Hillsborough are, but the city, you know, just wasn't aware of it. And in that case, in Salem, the company had signed a non-disclosure agreement with the city. And so, you know, city planners knew about it, but the city council didn't, and neither did the city's residents. And everyone's very upset about the secrecy.
Man, well, this is a story that's not going away. Interesting stuff.
No.
Yeah. Mike Rugaway, who is a longtime business reporter for the Oregonian, Mike, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you for bringing us this story.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Let's now check in with our own Brian Boll about his recent story on a native-run farm in Oregon. KLCC reporter Brian Boll. Brian, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, great to be here, Michael.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed the feature piece you did recently. Let's start with this. What is Elderberry Wisdom Farms?
Elderberry Wisdom Farms is the brainchild of a woman from Alaska, Alaska native, by the name of Rose Hybear. In 2017, I believe, she left Portland, moved to Salem, bought this two-acre farm, deemed it Elderberry Wisdom Farm, and began anew.
Huh. What do they do there?
Well, it is like a experimental laboratory slash classroom studio in that they bring on, when I last checked on Rose and her operation, she had 9 interns, all young college-age people, many of them from the Americas, indigenous backgrounds, Central or South American as well, who were basically there to learn what is called traditional ecological knowledge, or tech for short. Hmm. And that is just basically the application of long-held traditional environmental practices, such as prescribed or cultural burning, for example, or using herbs and certain tree roots and materials to treat disease or illnesses. So there's a lot of time-honored practices being taught to these interns at Elderberry Wisdom Farms.
Yeah, and maybe talk a little bit about the importance of that, of having this kind of education for interns, for young people who, like you said, are in college now.
Yeah, you know, so a number of them have been studying things like urban forestry or family medicine or environmental studies at their, you know, these standard universities, Oregon State University being one of them, one who became an urban forest planner. He was at the University of Oregon. But outside of those, there's not a lot of room for these indigenous practices and teachings that have been handed down through millennia. So this mm-hmm. is an opportunity for these people to come to this farm and learn how to put these into practice. And so it's kind of filling in a cultural component that they may not have otherwise.
Yeah, and you've certainly done stories about prescribed or cultural burns, and it's really borne out how important that practice can become in the quote-unquote modern world.
Absolutely. In fact, more than a century ago, a lot of these practices, like the prescribed or cultural burns, were outlawed. Mm. The USDA, U.S. Forest Service, they were very adamant on putting out fires the moment that they were seen, which in theory looks sensible. Mm-hmm. And from a public relations standpoint, puts a lot of people at risk because, you know, forest fires are usually demonized. But it also resulted in a lot of accumulated slash and a lot of stagnant ecosystems that naturally depend on fire to replenish themselves. There are species of trees, pine cones, that their seedlings only drop when they're exposed to fire. There's huckleberry stands. I know that the Klamath would burn the stands every 3 to 4 years to kind of replenish and rejuvenate the soil and the bushes themselves so that the berries stay ripe and flavorful. And so there's a lot of suppression that we've seen through history, but now we've got agencies that are bringing prescribed burns in. We see it right now happening out all around us with these huge forest fires that are happening. A lot of crews arrive early, and to protect the surrounding communities, they'll do a prescribed burn to deplete the fuel.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you're just joining us, we're talking with our reporter, Brian Bowl, about his story about the Elderberry Wisdom Farms. You interviewed some of the young people who attend this workshop, this farm. What were some of the things that they told you that showcases how important this kind of learning is to them?
One young woman I talked to, I believe Claudia Vega is mm-hmm. her name, and she was delighted, ecstatic to show me off this little plot of yew trees that they had received from a donor. And she was studying up. She had taken some traditional medicine studies from the Tohono O'odham and Yaqui people of Arizona when she was studying down there. And the yew tree is being studied very extensively as a treatment for cancer. And so she was very delighted to be able to hold and handle these small trees, which were going to grow and develop and help potentially develop medicines that will help alleviate the suffering of cancer people, cancer patients. There's another fellow, Joaquin Ocana, I believe, who was just kind of walking me through, and they're showing all the different types of plants and growth that they're developing without pesticides. Mm. And so they're trying to kind of develop more resilient, nature-friendly ways to raise things out in the wild where you don't have to introduce chemicals into the soil and water.
Yeah. You also write about, and you talk about, the fact that this farm received some funding to get started. Talk about how it was funded before, say, 2024 and the changeover in the presidential election.
Yeah, the year that was so important to note in the story was 2018. That's when Elderberry Wisdom Farms launched. And at that time, there was a lot of support in Congress and at the federal level for things like urban forestry studies and implementing environmental stewardship through the USDA and related agencies. And the Farm Bill even had a provision under that bumped up funding. And what we've seen is a kind of a political shift, a climate change, if you will, where this current administration under President Trump, starting last year when he assumed the second term of office, slashed a lot of programs and budgets for DEI and environmentally focused programs, which in turn ended up with, Rose had expected $749,000 from the USDA to put in tree canopies, which are just simply putting in trees to help provide shade, oxygen, and improve property values in lower income areas around the Salem area. Mm-hmm. And that had to be suspended because it looked like the funding was frozen. And then a congresswoman, Andrea Salinas, I believe, stepped in and was able to unfreeze it. Although there was another $350,000 for a BIPOC, Black Indigenous People of Color grant that remained stuck and she cannot do anything with it.
Is there a path forward for the Wisdom Farm?
There is hope that perhaps the State Bureau of Labor and Industries, I hope I'm getting that correctly, BOLI, will take them up on an apprenticeship program that Rose's developing, designing, and will introduce shortly as a way to kind of get continued funding. Because Rose Hybear is a very dedicated, passionate person about the environment and preserving these traditional practices. And so I think if there's a way, she'll find it. Yeah. She's determined to keep pressing on.
He's Brian Bohl, longtime reporter for us. Really appreciate your story. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Michael.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Right now, raw milk is having a moment. And that might not be a good thing for many people's health, especially children. Tomorrow on the show, a ProPublica reporter brings us the story of one of the largest raw milk producers in the nation and his rags-to-riches story and the fact that people keep getting sick on his products. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.